Yo, what is up, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome back to another episode of the Just Lee Road Show. Amelie. Presented by Winject Studios. And Black Label Nash. And the reason why I did this little dance and little song to that, because congratulations to Jess Lee, Steve Virginia, and the production staff, Winject Studios, everybody within the community of turning this Just Lee Road Show and breaking over 1 million downloads in the first 12 episodes going into 13. So I thought that was amazing. Woo! Congratulations to everybody. It was a team effort, that's for sure.
We went there's been
a lot
bro.
Of productions,
Chris,
producing.
Chris reached out to me and he goes, congratulations to you. I'm like, to us. Like, this has seriously been such a team effort. This would not be able to go down the way that we wanted to go down if Steve and I just tried to tackle it ourselves. And we were talking about, you know, not necessarily turning the road show into a podcast initially. And when Chris brought that to us, you know, when he brought that to us, Chris, it was kind of one of those things that it was like, it opened my mind in a new direction with where we were going to take it. And I've kind of mentioned this, I think in the first episode, that I was really nervous because I kind of wasn't expecting ever to do a podcast, to be honest with you.
Right.
And I'm glad that I have you guys to push me out of my boundaries because, you know, I would have taken this in a whole nother direction with some of the other things that were coming into our life and the offers that were coming into our life. And I'm glad that we chose this route because it's different and it's fun. And it's really kind of been, I don't know if therapeutic is the right word, but it's been really fun to be able to just, in a way, talk about things for ourselves and have our own really deep conversations that people can listen into and know that people are going to be able to take away something from it as well, which is really cool.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I also have to say something about Jessly. She's looking very radiant today. And this color peach looks amazing on her skin. Look at this. You guys are going to have to tune into the video just to see this because, wow.
Well, they get the videos anyway now because we have a lot of recordings and a lot of the staff's doing it in a way that we needed to with Winject Studios on the back end, winject.com.
Right. So,
you know, now that we have the exclusive content and early access, and it's kind of like a little shout out to our staff of putting everything in the framework and the funnel side of it. And just to let everyone know, winject.com is the place's all-in-one educational hub for people to come for content creators. They want to launch a show, YouTube shows, doesn't matter, any type of productions. You have the other side of it for the listeners, for the getting access to the interacting with the host and the guests and people to come onto the show. Like this show right now, this video content and this video component side of it, however you consume, is for podcasting, for audio. If you're on the road, whatever, and you want to watch the video, sit down and watch the video, pop some popcorn, whatever you do, and enjoy it. But it launches the same day that the show comes out for the radio side component or podcasting side. But just to let everyone know, if you want early access to this content, we do have that within the community, and that's just becoming a member of the community and go to winject.com/join. And now that with all the success that this show has received, and I'm so honored for every single person that has reshared the content and social media, it's just been crazy. Because I think also my staff even isn't enjoying it because they're getting a different version of me.
Yeah, I know. And that's one of the reasons I love this, you being on this show too, is because obviously I'm a fan of your podcast, but your podcast is a whole different side of you.
Setup.
You know, it's really truthfully mostly the business side of you, to where like this one, you can kind of like unbutton that button a little bit and let loose and let that hair fly.
Well, you know what's funny?
Let that hair down.
I wear my hair back and forth.
This show allows me to.
I'm bad and bougie, you know?
Yes.
This show allows me to be more me too, because whenever I have to be manager, Steve, a lot of times I have to be real buttoned up and I have to be real businesslike and I don't get to be jokey and I don't get to joke around with folks. And so until you get to really get to know them, obviously, but like if we're taking a meeting with a big company or a potential, you know, business partner, I don't get to be that way. And so for me, it's the same kind of thing as you, Chris. I get to come on here and really be Steve Virginia. And, and it's been a real blessing for me to do that. So thank
I've seen you
both for allowing me to do that.
I've seen you, I wouldn't say flourish. I've seen you you're starting to find your voice with the show. I think for the first couple episodes, but then again, I don't know. I think right from the beginning, there's a lot of synergy between the three of us, and it's really difficult to do a show with three people at three different personalities.
It really is. But I don't think that we're so different necessarily. I just think that, like, I think we all have similar personality traits.
Yes.
And that different personality traits are accentuated by what we do every day.
Right.
So when you get down to the core of it, our energies are the same, right?
Yes.
Like our souls, our energies are the same, but how we have to express our energy every day is different.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But this allows us to kind of, you meet people sometimes where you just cut from the same cloth. And like when I met Jess Lee, I knew we were best friends. Like the first second I met her, I was like, are we best friends? And she was like, yep. And that's just how it was. And we didn't know how we were going to be in each other's lives, but we were like, we're going to be in each other's lives forever. Mm-hmm. And I feel that same way with you too. And so it's pretty rare that you meet people like that. And I think this was just a case of the universe bringing three people who are 100% exactly alike together.
I think a lot of people too, like they take for granted family, sometimes, you know? Special connections that they have with people. You know, you get older and you realize that, like, sometimes you naturally just outgrow people. Like I left my town, you know, and my town is very, very small. I grew up in initially a country town in Loxahatchee, which was like 400 people.
Every time you say it, I get excited. Loxahatchee.
Makes you
want to
scratch.
It does.
Lots of scratchy.
So, you know, like when it was like 400 people and then, you know, you outgrow that and I don't talk to a lot of those people anymore because it's a completely different mindset, which there's nothing wrong with that. You know, it's just choices. You know, and then went to Stewart and then went to here. And I noticed that when I came out to Nashville, it was like my friends kind of dwindled down even more. And it was like one of those things that, you know, when you're able to develop a friendship with people that really are able to grow along the journey with you, that's a really special thing. Cause that's not always the case for a lot of people. A lot of people, mm-hmm. the more successful they get, they find themselves losing so many people around them because those people can't keep up with the pace. You know what I mean?
That's funny that you said that. The way that you said it, I was in an interview on Friday and they asked me a question. And he was a pretty predominant guy. And when it comes to investing, he was with the Dave Ramsey group and those types of individuals of financing and retiring pretty early.
Right.
And he's asked me a lot of questions when it comes to some investing tips, some ways that I'm able to kind of look in other industries. And, you know, we don't need to go on to the lucrative side of the obviously business, but yeah, it does. I have to present myself a little different when it comes to certain types of meetings and shows. Mm-hmm. I even found myself when I'm starting to go on other shows, I'm showing more myself.
Yeah.
But the other side. And he asked me a question when it comes to how do I keep the right people around me? Now I talked about boundaries and I was like, that boundary is there to protect them, not me. And he's like, whoa, what does that mean? I was like, well, it's there to protect them because they're not going to be able to withstand that type of frequency and energy level mm-hmm. from me. And then at some point, they're going to either resent me or secretly wanting me to fail.
Oh, well, for sure. True. You know, that's why friendships like this are so special, especially ones where you can cross into that business line and still mm-hmm. maintain respect. Because sometimes, you know, sometimes that's something that's really important to me, you know, especially working with my boyfriend, working, you mm-hmm. know, with my family in some cases on things, you know, and it's like, you always have to be able to know that, that friendship is just as important as the business side of things and being able to communicate and keep that friendship special, but also know that like there's a business level and a professional level of things and that have to get done as well. So I think that's really, really cool because, you know, I don't know a lot of people that have this dynamic. And I think it's really special that we get to showcase that we really all actually like each other. Oh god,
right.
I
yeah.
That's me like be like, I love you, Chris.
Just slap the mic. Yeah, like
we all really like each other.
I think that's true though, and I will give you kudos too, Chris. Like it's really hard for a businessman to have an entertainer's
it is
mindset. That's really, really unique. And it's like it seems like the businessmen who do have an entertainer's mindset are the ones that are really successful in entertainment. And that's a really hard thing to cross over. It's kind of like, you know, when I was talking about in the last episode about having different energies, voice both as her boyfriend and her manager and mm-hmm. her guitar player, you know, that's a really tough thing to do, to be able to turn one off and another one on or be able to let them blend toward one another. And it is really important, like she said, it's a really distinct thing that you have to do, where you have to understand that you're friends with people, but you're also business partners, but they're two different things.
Yeah, it's two separate. So, it's like a separate entity.
Like we have to. we have to unplug sometimes and just not do business so we can be a couple, but we also have to unplug the couple sometimes and MF each other over certain things so we can get business done, you know, and that's just how it is. And we rarely do that. But the fact is, like, we have to have those tough business conversations sometimes.
Well, it's keeping it spontaneous, I think. Yeah. For even I talk about this when it comes to emotional intelligence, and I appreciate the compliment. Entertainment angle, I guess you would say, is more about connecting business life or a message to human connection and how it's going to be received through different types of industries or different types of personality types. Talk a lot about this when it comes to marketing people. And this is where the marketing and sales, and I don't want to go on a tangent here, but people that do a great job with marketing, they think they're salespeople. You're fucking marketers. You're not salespeople.
Yeah.
Salespeople don't try to sell something. What they do is they try to share a vision and show them a different way of looking at a situation and showing them the benefits and features of what their life could be if they decide to move forward with that type of direction. And this is where marketing plays on the scarcity type of mindset, and they can play, or they use manipulate, that word manipulate. The intention behind it is to try to get you to convince you and using some type of subliminal language. Have you ever read the book Law of Seduction by Robert Greene?
No.
That's a powerful book. Anything that I'm telling you, that's a great book. I'll have to share. I'll share it with you. I got an audio version. That's a really good book to read or listen to. And it talks about the different dynamics of how people can use that with no weapons. And because obviously if you try to hurt someone's feelings, but you can use your seduction in a certain way. Most of the, obviously if the female energy or a masculine energy or whatever that feminine energy, it doesn't really matter. Cause you can, if you learn in the art of being able to seduce others, and that's by wanting to be around you, then you literally have unlimited power.
Yeah.
Like it's, you could do whatever you want to do. Mm-hmm. And I read that book, it changed a lot of my core way of thinking. If that kind of like,
for sure,
it like really I started to eradicate certain things that I used to value. And I'm like, well, this makes more sense. Robert Greene, by the way, a little shout out to Robert Greene. Holy shit. Have I ever seen him in a store or passing in a restaurant and he was writing on a napkin and he walked off? I'm going to go get that napkin. Everything this dude wrote down, he writes down is fucking gold. So I'm like, what? This is real life. Yeah.
I want to read that. I'm going to go and read that. So don't forget to share that with me after this.
You know, I'm really interested in today's episode, Chris, and you, because, you know, we're talking about a historic building in Nashville that has this energy about it. Right. Mm-hmm. And you said that you're able to read energies of things before you walk into it. So I'm really interested when you actually come to Nashville to take you there, because just like you can read energies and you have to be able to be fluent in energy with the people that you talk to in business. Mm-hmm. I'm interested to see if you pick up on the fluency of energy from this building, because there is a palpable electricity around it. And the thing about it is, this building we're talking about today, it's where we write all our songs, and
it's where we have like our little residency.
We have a little residency in it. And it's a historic building in Nashville, one of the very few historic buildings left on Music Row. So we wanted to give people kind of an inside look at it. And
I'm excited. I didn't really watch the clips today. I didn't watch them on purpose because I wanted to watch them. Yeah, I wanted to watch them. He did it for, I think it was episode 12 or 11. I can't remember which one it was. I did watch the ones from that day because obviously we had to upload them in like MP4 or whatever. But the ones the last little bit, I think it was this episode coming out this week or something like that.
So these visuals,
we didn't watch that. That was funny. Yeah, it was freaking funny because that was the first time me watching them. So
I like that you're doing that. I want to see your real reaction, you know, like your natural one. But these videos are soundless. And Steve, being here for like 15, 20 years in Nashville, I'm going to actually let him kind of explain the majority of it because he knows a ton of the history of this building because he's been there for it and has seen it. And he also knows some of the things that wanted to happen with it, such as it being at risk one time, being ripped down and things like that. So,
yeah. So I'll tell you a quick story behind the building. RCA Studio A and Studio B, they're two separate buildings. There's Studio A is broken into two parts, and the whole end of the building is RCA Studio A. It's now inhabited by Dave Cobb, who does Chris Stapleton and all those guys. He's a big time producer. I don't know if he has all of Studio A, but his offices are over there. But do you remember the band Ben Folds Five? Remember that?
I do, actually.
Okay, yes. So Ben Folds was in that building in the early 2000s. When I first came to Nashville, that was the building that I recorded my first album in. As Steve Virginia, which was pretty weird that full circle moment we came back. And when I first came to town was a long time ago. I don't want to date myself too much, but
why not? Show that you're 58.
I'm 119 years old. I look pretty good. So
be old and proud, Steve.
Upa Moses style, 119 years old.
Tell me a little bit more about RCA, the background behind it.
So interestingly enough, that building was the first building that I recorded my album in when I first moved to Nashville. It was 2006 when I recorded this record. And so I went in there. There was a bunch of kids working on the record. They're kids back then. This guy named Ilya Tushinsky, who you can't even know how to spell his last name. He's Russian. He was in a band named Bering Strait at the time. They were a bluegrass band from Russia. He was just becoming a studio musician. He's won 6-time ACM Player of the Year. Now he's a producer. He's really sought after. There's a guy named Derek Wells who played guitar on my record, who also has won ACM Player of the Year like 10 times. And
what is ACM? Is it American?
That's the Academy of Country Music.
Okay, got it.
So like they're tippity-top players now. When I first moved here, they were rookies. They had never played on any records before. If they had, it was very few.
Yeah.
So I recorded my first record at this building. And
what was the song?
Oddly enough, the song that got me a lot of attention at when I was an artist was a cover song of Stone in Love by Journey. Remember that song?
I love Journey.
Yeah, so we had done a bunch of original
songs.
Don't
stop.
It wasn't that
leaving.
One. I do love that one. And I met some of the guys from Journey, but interestingly enough, later on showed that song. A friend of ours who mastered the track showed it to Steve Perry. And Steve Perry loved it. And Steve Perry listened to the whole track and he goes, "Dang, that's a jam, man. That's a hit. Country hit." And he goes, "But he got one of the words wrong. I sang like one word wrong."
Are
in the
you
song.
Serious?
Yeah, he did. He picked out the one word that
remix.
I changed.
What if that was your like interpretation of the cut?
Right. It could have been.
Like, shut
anyway,
up.
Anyway, so
this is what you should have wrote. This is what you should have wrote, sir.
Yeah. I love you though, Steve Perry. You're my favorite. But anyway, so I recorded there. And so when we had the opportunity to get a spot there as a residency at RCA, It was kind of like full circle moment for me because that studio is on the same hallway but on a floor underneath.
Do you have flashbacks?
No, because what I'm doing now is so much more fulfilling and so much better that I don't want to go back and think about that because I was really struggling back then to find myself as an artist. And that's part of my journey as a manager is to take that and mold it in a way that I can help her and push her forward.
I think that's powerful. I think that's powerful because that could end up being your superpower when it comes to you being a manager.
Maybe. Yeah. I tell people all the time, the reason I was so not possessed, but so like moved to be a manager and so quickly with Jessely was because I wanted to protect her from people. It was that energy I felt from her.
Mm-hmm. You were drawn to it.
I was drawn to it, and I wanted
to
protect
her. You were not possessed.
Her.
I did not possess you.
She possessed me.
No. Possess you. No.
Right. I saw her, and I was
It's more about obsessed. Yeah.
I was obsessed. No, but so she goes, I wanted to protect her from all the stuff that I had messed up. I had gotten with unscrupulous people who didn't have my best intentions in mind. And that's one thing that I'm really
your beacon light was exposed.
Yeah. And so
that's important to talk about just for a second, if we can.
That happened to her when she moved to Nashville. That happened to her a lot where people would approach her with the wrong intention. And I won't tell you who or what they did or anything, but I would several times have to stick my head up and be like, "Hey, this person,
it's not right.
Something's not right. You need to step back." And even if it was a great opportunity with somebody that was really big, we've talked about this in the past. You have to, part of my job as her manager and the difficult part is as her boyfriend, you want to be like, I'm going to fuck you up. Right. But as her manager, you have to wear the manager hat and say, "Listen, you can do this if you want to, but here's why I don't think it's a good idea. Mm-hmm. But the only way I've been able to do that is because I've gone through literally the same situation times five.
Before we were even dating though, you did come out multiple times and be like, I just feel like I need to protect you.
Yeah.
You would say that's true. He would say that over and over again. But what were you saying about the beacon light though?
Yeah, that beacon light, that's your source, right?
Right.
And most people, and the reason why I say his beacon light, that's the time that he's able to tap into his source. We mm-hmm. discovered that in one of the previous episodes when we were talking about it, when he went on stage, I think it was at Country Fest, and one of the clips that I watched.
Yes.
He was just in a trance. He was in a different world.
He was in flow.
Right. And he was
straight up in flow.
He was 100% dialed in.
Yes.
In certain situations, he's not dialed in, but that's how he's able to get himself back. It's like his release.
That's the recycling.
Mm-hmm. And then, and if you're not able to recycle, that's the first thing that I try to share with people when I go to train or I'm in business. I was in a board meeting, I think 3 months ago, and it was virtual and was difficult, but I seen the person was unraveling a little bit. And I sent him a message. Was like, yo man, if there's anything I can do to help you, just please let me know, because you were on the same board and there's certain decisions that you're going to make are going to impact the longevity of this type of, you know, carbon-free company.
Yes.
And I think that I owe it to you, and not just for you as a person, because I do love every human individually, but that's, you have to make that shift of not really wanting anything in return. Yes. If that makes sense.
Absolutely.
So when people always have their ulterior motives, I pick up on that really quick, and I could end up being a superpower for you guys. It's certain situations.
Yes.
Because I'm like, that energy will walk into a room and I'm like, steer away from that individual. Because I see it coming from a mile away.
About you too, though, is that you're so, not only are you really intuitive and tapped into it, but you've developed this trust. And that's the biggest thing. I have that same intuitive nature. Steve has told me countless times, he's like, damn, I wish you would have just listened to what you told me later, or what you told me earlier. Cause there's plenty of people that we've met and I felt like this person's really genuine, or this person's got something that they're not, it doesn't come off sincere.
Right.
And I catch that. But my whole thing is, although I do have an empathetic side, I also have a side of me that's like, I want to believe, I want to go back in the natural trust of like that we come here and our energy is pure and people are pure and we all are rooted in good. Right. Mm-hmm. And you want to believe that, but it's
very rare. You can't co-create. You can't co-create with individuals that have ulterior motives, because they're not going to be 100% present in that moment.
Yeah.
Of wanting the best for you short term and long term. Right. Even when we're working, trying to work on something brand new coming out that we didn't really, I guess, anticipate moving as quickly as we did, because there's a lot of moving parts within Winject Studios that make Winject potential music happen.
Right.
And even if it got to a certain point, and I told Steve in the separate conversations, there's a lot of conversations that we have that you're not involved in because you're the talent. You know what I mean? So, I told Steve, I was like, at some point, if I feel that this isn't going to be in the best interest of her short and long term, we're going to have to work out a separate deal. But the podcast show, that'll stay.
Right.
But as in for that type of stuff, then we're going to have to do what's in the best interest. If ever I got to a point to where I can't, because it gets different with you guys as well, because in a short, very much period of time, you became family and you proved it.
Mm-hmm.
Even me showing a lot of stuff that I've been going through in my personal life.
Yeah.
You guys were there to lift me up when there was no one really there to lift me up. Right.
Well, and that's so important. That's so important. Right. And, you know, and that's, well, but I, where I was going with that, though, is I love how you're so trusting of your intuitive nature, though, is because Steve and I've had so many conversations of how I wish I wish I would have listened to some things that I called out earlier, but I'm always that person that I'm like, oh, well, you know what? You've got to give everybody a chance. Right. Like then, and
that's not true.
Yeah. And you know, that's my biggest downfall is I am too trustworthy sometimes. Sometimes I think, oh, well, we're all rooted in good, so everybody's good. Where mm-hmm. we're not when you get down here in this physical level. You know, I should have learned that from my father a long time ago, that not everybody has the best intentions for people. When you your source is probably great. They're rooted in good and light, but you come down here and people's physicality change that, you know?
Right. You gotta look at one component and there's one angle that you're able to really see them for their true selves.
Yeah.
Is the generosity side of them.
Yeah.
If they're generous. And what I mean by generous, not doing something for something else in return, but doing it when they didn't even have to.
Yeah, absolutely.
Do you see my point?
Yeah. Just giving for no reason.
No reason at all. And you're always, and if the person always is giving and giving and giving, it's the problem with it. If they're too generous, they can give away their heart and soul. And that's why that trust there for me is because I used to be the person would give anybody anything, but I gave with, I wouldn't say the really expectation of really in return, but they didn't even respect me for who I was or what I was doing. There's a resentment there. Then I'm like, damn, they don't appreciate shit. Right. And then that's hurting me. So there's a certain line that I've drawn now in the sand.
Yeah.
I can't wait. Even my family back home, they don't even know this version. And they're a little perplexed sometimes when they're sitting back having conversations with me. It's like this, you know, how much work I've put in, even in certain companies, there's certain angles now that I've opened up to. And it's a different type of way of thinking.
Right.
That I see things way before I can anticipate moving parts. And that was my way of tapping all the way back in, but I had to deal with my trauma.
Yeah.
And I think that's where you have
that balance though. I love that you have that balance though, because I think that's where kind of what Steve was saying, most business people don't. You know, you have so many business people that they have everything in the world when it comes to monetary wealth, but their other buckets are not full.
Yeah, walking, talking fraud.
Yeah, that's the thing is like, you know, what is success? It's not money. You know, I mean, I think that that's a great thing. It's obviously beautiful to be able to live a life that you want to be able to live when it comes to how comfortable you are. And there's nothing wrong with that. I'm all about money and the frequency of money and it being along the frequency of love. But you know, you find so many people that they've tuned in and refined and tapped into that frequency so well, and then they forget everything else. Mm-hmm. And then they're lacking love and they're lacking friendships and they're lacking relationships. And that's why I would do the other thing, you know, you were Chris, for everybody listening, Chris was just featured in Thrive, which is one of my favorite. I had one of my favorite articles in Thrive ever. And I love their community over there. And he was featured in talking about friendships. And I loved his advice on it. So go make sure that you do that, because cultivating friendships is part of one of your buckets. You know, being a human, we want to have relationships. We want to have healthy, established, trusting relationships in our life. And, you know, it is really interesting when you could find someone like you who has the monetary success that you have, but also you're so well-rounded in so many other areas, because you find that is far few in between when you get into a lot of like wealthier people.
100%.
It really is.
Yeah. It's difficult.
It's because you're a good person, Chris.
I appreciate that. It means a lot, because there was a certain part of my life and I was very pretentious and very egotistical.
I feel like everybody goes through that stage.
You have to go through that.
You have to go through it, and you got to learn from it.
I was attached from a source.
And recognize it, because if you don't recognize it, if you're in the denial state, then you're never going to learn. You know,
you have to allow your soul to allow it to be successful and comfortable with where you are.
Absolutely.
Because you can bring as much discord to yourself as you can. Success. 100%,
bro. 100%. That's
what you go through. Everybody goes through it, though. Like I went through it big time, and I'll just be very frankly honest. When I moved to Nashville, I moved with Eric, or not with him, but like about the same time as Eric Church. Mm-hmm. And I love the guy. He was, you know, we wrote together and I was in a wedding with him in Boone. And it's like, I came here and I was obsessed, like literally obsessed. My ego got me obsessed with his success. So I forgot about my own. right? Mm. And so I was consistently comparing myself to Church. What is he doing? What's he doing? What's he doing? Mm-hmm. Oh, he got a publishing deal at Sony. Oh my gosh, what's he doing? What's he doing? Oh, he just signed at Capitol. I should be doing that too.
Right.
And I forgot.
You see what I'm talking about? That you see what I'm talking about? The resentment side.
Yeah. And so you start to resent, not necessarily the person, but you kind of get jealous and you start resenting the situation that you think, I deserve that. I deserve that. Not realizing that, well, you're going to get that too. And you do deserve it, but that doesn't distract from your path as a person. There's abundance everywhere, right?
Yeah.
And so everybody
trying to compare too much.
Yeah.
Right.
Everybody falls into that trap though. And that's not the only time that happened to me, because, you know, when you move out here, you become friends with other artists, and other artists ascend really fast and some fall and they don't. And you never know who that's going to be. And so that was a real hard lesson to learn, where I could finally just be like, you know, and I think quite frankly, I learned it when I became a manager, because I had to drop my ego as an artist, you know?
Okay.
And that was a hard thing to let go, because I have a lot of superstar friends, you know, mm-hmm. and I felt like I was just as capable of doing what they're doing as anybody else. And so
I would argue it makes you a little bit more powerful.
Maybe so.
I agree.
Maybe so. And because I understand that now, you know, I understand exactly what that is and exactly why it happened.
I believe that you found your path that you're able to tap into some potential that you never thought was there.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm saying. It makes you a little bit more powerful.
Yeah.
Because it's easy when you are great at one thing. You can become great at one thing and you can't seem to get to the unstoppable or phenomenal side.
Yes. Yeah.
And you only get to a certain level.
Out of balance, because yeah, you're so great at that one right. thing, and everything's pouring into that one thing, and you're not cultivating and nourishing those other buckets that you have in your life. I forgot the name of the book, but it's literally a book.
You got to surrender. You got to surrender. Buckets.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. You got to surrender at some point. And there's a lot of glass ceilings that people don't realize.
Yeah.
That's something that I think is so, and circling back full circle, something that's so special about this building we're in.
I was just going to say, this is the magic of RCA right now. Look at this.
You walk into the building and you instantly, if you have creative in you, you surrender to the spirit of the building.
Exactly.
The building has a spirit.
It does. And it's insane. It's alive. That building is alive and well.
We have stories from songs.
What does RCA stand for?
It's a Victor recording company. It's I don't know.
Do you remember the dog in the old logo? Yeah.
You're gonna
is it the same
him.
Logo?
You're gonna see him. He's so cute.
Oh, is it? Yeah, I can't remember. Yeah. I still remember that when I was young. Maybe it's because my parents really love Kenny Rogers, and Kenny Rogers was every time I think of RC, I think of Kenny Rogers for some reason.
Yeah.
I don't know why. Anyway,
all I can say is that this building is magical, and I'm so glad that they didn't tear it down. Did you end up getting into the story?
It's Radio Corporation of America is what it stands
for. Okay.
Did you get into the story of them about to tear it down and finish that?
No, I didn't.
So we'll tell this, and then we'll roll the clip.
We got sidetracked by the beautiful little capo.
So when I was a youngster out here in Nashville and we were making records there, Music Row used to just be two streets, 16th and 17th Avenue. And every record label was there. Every publishing house was there. So you could walk up and down the street and see, you know, everything. Sony and Capitol and Warner Brothers and all of those were on that street. Now they've moved. They've since moved. RCA is probably one of the oldest standing entertainment buildings on that street still. So when we were there, all these land developers decided that they wanted to turn residential, and they wanted to turn it residential business, where they would put business on the bottom, residential on top. Mm. And so they were tearing down all these buildings and resurrecting all these buildings and turning all of these private residences that were just houses, like she's talked about pub houses, into commercial buildings. And so they started Alan Jackson wrote a song about it called Murder on Music Row. It's literally a thing where – do I need to stop here, Christopher?
No, I'm coming. Hold on. So I'm just turning this light down. I was trying to do it so you wouldn't stop talking. So sorry. Go ahead.
I'll start over.
Yeah, so sorry. I looked up and it's like right at a time when the time's about to change back. And it's getting dark. And now it was just getting dark around like 9 o'clock. Now it's like 7-ish.
So Alan Jackson.
Hold on. Ready? Start.
We need one of those things.
I know.
Do you have one?
No. Actually, I do, I think. Hold on. If I find it, I'll do it. But
so that would be pretty cool that if you did that on the show, be like.
So Alan Jackson actually wrote a song about this called "Murder on Music Row," where
I've heard that song. I like Alan Jackson.
It was about the destruction of Music Row and how people were bastardizing the magic of that row.
Yeah.
So back when I was recording there, shortly afterwards, they were talking about destroying the building. They were going to tear it down and put.
What a freaking
complex there, right?
I don't like stuff like that. Even you see with stadiums, they tear down a stadium. Mm-hmm. Like, stop, don't do that, man. Yeah.
And it's so, like,
sad. So there's so much history and energy. And, like, long story short, I'm glad they saved this building.
Well, they were going to tear it down.
You just destroyed memories. Like, the Georgia Dome, obviously, they made a new stadium. I haven't been to the new Falcons Stadium.
Yeah.
The same way. But they blew up Georgia Dome. And I was like, man, that's kind of sucks. It just ruined all the memories that I had.
Yeah. So they were going to tear down this building, and Ben Folds actually got it registered as a historic building. And so they saved it. And so Ben Folds V, the guy who I was talking about earlier, he saved the building. And so the building is now, it still stands, and it's just, like I said, it's got a spirit about it. You walk in and you feel the ghost. You can just feel that Chet Atkins is still there.
We've mentioned this before, I've never written a bad song in that building.
Never.
And like legit, you get in there. You breathe different and you feel smarter and I'm not even kidding. You feel inspired. It's like you literally have the greatest minds in music in general, just coming together, and they want to help you. And it's like, it's truly magical. So yeah, we'll give you a little tour of it. And we actually open up a section of our room. We don't show all of it, but we're showing a little section of our room and where a lot of our magic happens when it comes to songwriting in there.
Who runs it?
The building?
Yeah.
That's a good question, actually.
It's to be honest with you, I really don't know. We work through somebody who works through the person who does it. So
right. Yeah. Well, I would figure that it would be done in that way, but I was just curious to see who would actually run the building and making some of the decisions when it comes to operations and whatnot.
Yeah.
Just curious. I can't turn that off my brain. You ready to play the clip?
Yeah. Let's play the clip,
and I'm going to let Steve explain some of the stuff that we show in there.
All right. Perfect.
Let's hit it. So this is the outside. This is actually the back of RCA. That's the RCA record label logo. That's what it turned into after the doggy, which you're getting ready to see.
There he is.
The RCA Victor Recording Studios dog. So they kept both of those signs. That's the front of the building on Music Row. Inside, they have photos of the history of the building and everybody who's recorded there, right? So there's black and white photos literally everywhere. That black door goes to the studio that I recorded in. So there's Charlie Pride. Let's see, who else can I see on the wall? We're passing, I believe that was Roy Orbison as a young man. There's Chet Atkins. There's a big picture of Chet down front because he actually owned the building for a while.
Oh, man.
That's a building. That's the actual RCA Studio A room that they record in. It's a live room. There's a
Dolly.
And there's Charlie Pride. There's Chet right there. That's right down our hallway. George, Chris Stapleton, Willie, Waylon Jennings, the Outlaws. You know, you've got Keith Whitley, Shania Twain, Leanne Womack, Ronnie Millsap. You know, you've got all these people that have recorded in this building, Alabama and 10 times platinum. There's Marty Stewart. There's Roy Orbison and Jerry Reed going on a fishing trip with their band. There's Kenny Rogers and the Judds.
Yep.
You know, you've got Marty Stewart again. This is looking down our hallway here. This is the magic room. That's Chet Atkins' office. We've actually written in there before, and you can feel the guy. This is our project studio. We wanted to keep the project studio. It looks like a 70s studio. We wanted to keep that vibe because we didn't want to ruin the history or magic of that building.
I like that.
That through there is our overdub room. That's where people actually play, you know, the instruments and stuff. But we bring our computer in here. We plug up to that system and we vibe out. So Jesley sits on the couch behind us. We recorded all the vocals to
that couch candles.
It was on the couch. I was going to ask you, was it that? Was
that's
that
the one
your
that
room?
Capo was even, sitting there, and I was petting her the whole time. And
she didn't even go in a vocal booth.
No, the vocal booths back there. So we actually have in that door that we showed with that little stained glass window. Mm-hmm. That's where we have a vocal booth. We have a player booth back there. And a little like kitchenette area and stuff in the back. So
definitely see the texture of the building outside reminded me of the South.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so growing up, it's like me going back in, it's like going to summer. Well, I say I'm from Charleston, but I'm actually from Somerville.
Right.
It's right outside of Charleston. Yep. I think anywhere you can get, if once you get on the interstate, you can go anywhere in Charleston in 15 minutes. Right. But that looked like, that building looked like the old Somerville back in the day of the certain buildings.
Yeah. Well, that's, you know, when we came in that room, we didn't want to change it too much because, like I said, the first song we wrote in there, I'll let Jesse tell you the story. We left to go tour the building with the guy who was got us the room, right?
Yes.
We were riding with him and we left to go tour the building. And when we came
not just everybody can get a room, correct? I mean, let's talk about that just for
you
a second.
You have to know somebody to know somebody to get a spot there. And so,
right. Because obviously it has a lot of history in that place. And I don't think
honestly too right on the road. So there is like a price point too. Like if you're going to be in that room, like you need to be doing well as a writer. Sometimes it's publishing rooms as well. Mm-hmm. So like, the case scenario for a couple of the rooms in there as well is that like if you have signed a publishing deal and the publishing deal rents that room out there, sometimes they're just small independent publishing deals that they literally just have that one room and they share it with multiple artists on the roster.
Right.
And then they just kind of all like take turns using that room as well.
Yeah.
So it kind of depends because there's how many rooms would you say are in there?
Probably 50 different suites in there.
Yeah, 50 different suites.
They range in size. There are several studios inside there.
And all of them have different, you know, different situations. Some of them they're literally just suites and people just use them just as recording rooms. Like Eddie Gore is in there and he just is a recorder and he literally will go and just record artists. And that's what he does in there. That's his studio. That's how he runs his business.
He runs the studio I recorded my first record in.
Yeah. Eddie Gore. That's so weird. I forgot about that.
Yeah. And then
that was a good segue. I'm curious to know, do you know the number of in the vicinity or round number of how many hits that have been written in that building?
Oh my gosh.
Thousands. I mean, you know, we're talking about.
Well, it's recording too. So, because a lot of those pictures, it's not just written, it's people that came in there to record as well.
Of course.
So they did either or sometimes both.
So keep in mind, that was the main studio for RCA for years. And so every record that came through RCA was recorded in that big room you saw. And that big room is huge. It's like the size of half of a gymnasium. And the reason they did that is because they used to get together in the room. They still do it in some instances, but in the 70s, they used to have 30 players on a track.
And they'd all record.
And they would all record live. They would all record it at once. And so there's no overdub. Well, there were overdubs, but it was much harder to overdub back then because you'd have to cut tape and splice tape and stick it back together.
It's crazy.
And so they would try and get it as a one take. And so they would get everybody in those rooms. And so all of those old RCA recordings were done in that building. And so you have all of the Kenny Rogers stuff and all of that Dolly Parton stuff and all of that Chet Atkins stuff and all the Charlie Pride and everybody who is a writer, Roy Orbis and Jerry Reed and all those cats who are in there. And even to this day, Chris Stapleton and George Strait and Shania Twain all recorded in the building. And so
have you ever met George Strait?
You did? What?
No, have you ever met George Strait?
I have not.
I met his manager. Doesn't count.
I'm just curious. He does live in Tennessee now, right? Or he lives somewhere else?
He has a house in Tennessee. I don't know where he lives.
I don't know. Yeah. I love George Strait.
Yeah. He's amazing.
Pretty much everything he's written. Well, not when you say written, but everything he's come out with, I pretty much liked. That's one. Yeah. It's one artist I can hit play and not have to change the song.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's great. So tell him the story about when we left to take a tour of the building and came back and wrote that song.
Oh, so one of our like most magical moments in there was the first time we ever wrote in that building. And
this is when we knew that.
Yeah.
This is when you knew
that we were being assisted by some of the greats. So we, literally the first time that I'd ever been in that building. Steve obviously had been. And we were first time in that room and I felt like such an amateur, but I had just moved out and I had just signed my first publishing deal to Nashville. And I was really, really excited about it just to be in that spot. Mm-hmm. So the person that we were writing with was like, well, hey, you know what? You haven't seen this room. Let me go ahead and give you a tour of the building. So they give us a tour of the building, and I'm like, I'm looking like an amateur because I'm literally all those photos you saw taking pictures with the pictures.
Yeah. I would have been the same because there's so much. I'm not even just for myself. I just like mentally, I think of my grandmother, my granny, loved because I used to go to Tennessee. And they would take us up there or whatnot, and they picked me for 1 year. And I think I was like 12 or 13, and we got to go to Tennessee and go on vacation with them. And God bless them to death. They still would go on vacation by themselves every year with even no kids. And they took me 1 year. And I remember we went to Dollywood and we drove by. It was by a bunch of recording studios and they were all like taking pictures and shit. And I didn't know what it was then. So that's what when you said that, I was like, I'd have been doing the same because I would have had to, you know, I'm like, I was thinking that when the clips, I was like, my granny is dying right now if she's around. You know, like, oh my God, look at this stuff. Yeah. Anyway, so funny how things you attract into your life and the memories that come up in your mind when you see something that is not even like really for you, but you're interested because of their interest in something. So,
yeah, absolutely. Mm. Well, this was just me being shameless and just wanting and loving
That's
it.
A great
and,
song too.
And being shameless. And being so excited, you know, that like I was in that room, in that space, because, you know, especially when you're starting off, like, you know, I spent so much of my life feeling like I didn't quite fit in. You know, with the abuse that I grew up with all the things that I had done in life as a teen, trying to just kind of figure myself out and find myself out. I never really fit in with people in school when it came to like wanting to go to parties and things like that. And it was kind of one of those things that this was the first time in my life feeling like I was with my crowd. Like I finally found my crowd of people that like made me feel like I was fully myself, you know? So, it was really cool to be able to go in there and feel like I was closer to where I wanted to be with my career being in that energy. So, so we got back in the room and I took all those photos and, Steve knew a bunch of the history. So he was talking about it as well and everything. We went and saw his room that he recorded in, and we came back up to write the song, and all of our guitars, when we got started, we pulled them out. All of our guitars that we brought were tuned up. And for anyone who does not have guitar knowledge, they tune themselves down. You have to actually physically go and tune a guitar up. So we ended up writing in that key. We felt like in that moment, like the ghosts of RCA were telling us something and assisting us for whatever reason to write this song. And when he came in, we came in. We
Steve's
all
right now raising his hand. He's raising a finger.
They weren't just tuned up. They were tuned up in tune, a step up.
Yeah.
Like, so that's impossible. Like there's no other explanation than somebody did it, but there was nobody else in the building.
Yeah.
So like, please continue.
Well, so it was funny because, you know, I was very fresh.
Not to cut you off. This is funny. We need to get the edit guys. Make sure you start clipping the Steve, hey, I have to say something. And then and just put a bunch of those together. Could be just one
episode. We need a montage at the end of one.
Yeah, like, we do it. Like, yeah.
At the very, very end of this season, we should just have a Steve montage of things. We should have a montage of everything we all do. That's like obsessive.
We're saying the same shit.
Right. So all the guitars are tuned up. We're all like, oh my God, this is crazy. And it totally inspired me and all of us actually to start writing a song that we never initially would have written in the first place. We were going to come in and just write some like pop country ditty kind of thing. And we ended up writing this super soul, like, and I mean, it does have a traditional element to it. Like more traditional.
It's a 3/4 ballad.
Yeah. Waltz country song.
Whatever the hell that means to me.
Yeah. Yeah, 3/4 ballad, powerhouse.
Oh, no, I heard the song. You're talking about the new song.
No, we're talking about a song. It's called Can't Stop Drinking About You.
Ooh.
Yeah, shit. And it was just really, really.
It's my favorite song stop that we've drinking about today. You.
That's so right. That's what Steve is. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Sorry.
It's like.
There's so many conversations about so many different things.
Yeah.
It's one of my favorites, I should say, because we're writing some really great material now. But
yeah, there's so much.
But this song, it's really special because of this moment. You know, it's like.
Well, the song is special itself. I mean, we had zero intentions to write a song like that, like some soul, sad, like deep shit, you know? And something was pulled out of me that day that I had never tapped into before because I didn't really write like that. And then
let's talk about that for a second. What does that feel like to you?
It's therapeutic in a lot of ways.
Okay.
It's electric. Empowering. Yeah. I was just going to say it's empowering. It's electric. It's electric. Cause then I think of the electric. I had that same word in my head, but I was I don't want to say it's electric.
No, but I'm just saying
it's extremely empowering. Like you feel a sense of electricity that you don't normally feel going through your body. It's surge like, because you just have this influx of endless thoughts and inspiration that literally just surges through you. Yeah.
You got to ride that wave. What are some of your ways of being able to drain all the juice out of that creative side of you?
Well, you have to get everything out. Everything you do. That you have.
Yeah, you have to dump it all out and at so that one moment.
You put it all down on paper, and sometimes lines that are incredible
out of you.
Ideas that are incredible, you don't even use because they don't make sense with the story.
Uh-huh.
But like she's so good as a writer, she'll come up with 10 different lines for the same thing.
Well,
and we'll choose the best one.
First I get a surge of melodies. He's seen my process. Master. It's a very similar process. In a lot of ways it is, but it isn't. I don't always have the same exact. First I get a surge of melodies and I just start singing melodies and I usually end up coming out and I'm like, you know, it was the same thing with Love Me Ugly. It was like all of a sudden, you know, I was like, da 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 da, you know, and I start singing this stuff. Don't have any words and I'm mumbling random things and there's really no words to come to it yet. But the first thing I want to do is figure out the pentameter and the format of what we're going to fit in, because melody is the first thing that gets you. It's like Steve and I talk about, it's like when you see a hot chick, right? Like, and I'm saying this for the guys here, like when you, especially guys, because
this is true.
Penis does the picking with guys. So, you see the hot chick first, and what's going to be the first thing that's going to attract you to them usually is their looks. Then you find out whether you like them or not. A lot of the times, you know, for in my case scenario, I have been attracted to men and gone off looks first, and then I get to know them and they get uglier as I get to know them, because it's like they have nothing about them that I like internally, you know. But so the melody is like,
I was speaking on this with a guy, and I told him your posture is the reason why you are picking women in your life and women aren't choosing you,
right?
And he was like, what? And I was like, never mind. <Just walked off. laughs> He was like, that's like, what a hell of a comment. I was like, it was because, you know, he wasn't. I speak a lot about this when you speak, like I'm obviously sitting down having a conversation with you.
Yeah.
This desk rises.
Yeah.
I rise the desk when I'm working. Okay.
Right.
I'm not sitting down usually unless I'm like doing emails or some bullshit that I don't like to do, but I'm not tapped into my creative side sitting down.
Right.
Yeah. You know what I mean? So, yeah. And you can't transfer energy sitting down. It makes it difficult. So go ahead. Love this.
Well, she's so interesting because I write sitting down.
She's a melody machine.
What I'm talking about executing.
You can.
I can sit down and write something out, and then writing something out, but going to put it in, because this is where the energy needs to flow. So you need to stand up to kind of work it out. If that makes sense, right?
So she is right in the sense that the melody is the initial attraction. It's the hotness of the girl, and then when you get down to
when it comes to the melody, is the first thing to be. It's easier because a lot melodies, especially too, like if you're a good songwriter, they're strategically the same in a lot of places. Well, you repeat them to make it hooky. Like for instance, a chorus, right?
Right.
Like it's the same melody in those choruses, and those verses usually match melody wise. They're symmetrical. So like when you're thinking of a melody, you think about the fact that it's going to be on purpose. It's going to be purposely hooky in a way for you to grasp onto it and hold onto it and remember it quicker to where words, all those words, that's more to memorize. There's more that's different. So like a really good writer, they'll try to build around their melody. Like
you study the chemicals. Have you studied the chemicals that are released in the human mind with certain melodies?
No, but no. I think that
you
that's,
should.
I think that that's I like have. Really
it
cool.
is insane. Insane.
Yeah, the creative, they say, do certain things to you.
Yes, 100%.
Sure. Wow. Mm-hmm.
You can reset yourself with a certain dial.
Mm-hmm. There's actually a conspiracy theory that in the 50s, they changed the frequency of music to not resonate as deeply with people. and but that there were certain bands in the 70s.
This is where I read this information. Yeah.
Yeah. So there were certain bands that went back in the 70s and recorded in the original frequency. And those are the classic rock songs now that everybody like is with, you know, like all those Zeppelin songs were recorded in the original frequency. And, you know, there may be a reason that there is stuff that doesn't resonate with his people as long as it did back in the 70s. Anyway, that's a whole different topic.
No, we can go. I like always wanted to do a passion project like that too. I've told Steve over and over again that like, I want to test that theory and go back and do a song and cut a single in that frequency.
You can cut a single in the 50s, cut a single 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s. You can just make it more. Remember I was telling you like World War II is like the last era of a true gentleman.
Yeah.
Well, during that time, 40s to 50s ish, the music was more soothing and more acceptable to out of respect for certain people. When it started shifting over to the 60s and 70s, a little bit more of a rebellious type of age and era, there's a lot of chaos. They're prepping you for the next part.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm not going to go all the way down a deep rapid hole, but it's true. I started studying the chemicals that are released. Perfect example. What are the most like video games? Like women don't play video games. Angry Birds.
Mm.
What are they doing with Angry Birds? This swiping. Tinder.
Yeah.
Swiping. What is the next one? Instagram going up. That for a female, it's releasing a different, it's the higher chemical of dopamine that makes you addicted to it.
Yeah, that's true. That's why really women interesting. They launched Instagram and it was
episode over
women at the beginning. Yeah. Right? Done. Click. We're finished.
This would be a very fun test though theory to bring back to this show because Steve and I have been wanting to do this. So like it'd be cool to maybe, you know, pull the stats out one day and see what happens with like releasing a song in that frequency, and readdress.
Well, that could be something that we could do within like in some type of app or you can do. People say, well, that hasn't been invented or that hasn't been whatever. You can't do that. Don't tell me shit about what you can't do. I think that you could take something and maybe a music producer could do this is turning them into and seeing which one resonates.
I think that it should be a project. I think we should do a side project.
That would be really hard. You'd actually have to record it in its actual natural frequency, which we could do and just not tell people and see which song they resonate with better.
Do you remember the show on ESPN? And I'm such a freaking nerd, Sports Science. Do you remember that show where they will break down
what a guy
would do? And it was a sports science, but you should do the music science.
I feel that's, like you'd remember cool. that better because I like don't that remember type that.
But it's like they would go to the athlete will go to this lab and they will break it down on how
that's
fast
a great idea. Let's do that. Let's do it and then have people vote on which one they resonate.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah.
I think it'd be cool. I think we should readdress this and bring this back in one of the episodes.
Yeah. We'll call it a test. It'll be the first interactive Jesse Roadshow.
And it puts in a, like what we can end up doing, I can reach out to Dr. Amon's group and I have some connections on that side and doing a brain scan on for those who actually listen to that and what happens with the neurons.
It'll be
inside
different.
Of a human brain. Yeah.
It'll be very different. I guarantee you it'll connect better. So I know we got
That was left field, but
we got mucho sidetracked, but that's a really interesting subject.
We close up too. I think we should take a poll. And maybe say like, because I've always, you know, as a songwriter, and I've been mentored by some really really great writers, and I've always been taught to focus on the melody and building around that melody. But I would like to know, just out of curiosity, as you know, to the listeners, what attracts you more? What do you find in your that you're learning faster? You're more attracted to? Are you immediately going and listening for lyrics, or are you getting addicted to a melody? So I feel like. I'd like to know.
I'm a melody guy, but yeah, I'd like to know everybody else too. I feel like she said, the melody is the hot chick and the lyrics are what makes you fall in love with her.
I believe I'm more of I like the lyricist side of it, the genius of some of the deep messages that people would try to communicate and articulate over. But then again, I love music, the melody side of it.
Yeah.
I love good music. It doesn't really matter. You can, when it's a hit, it's a hit. You know. And you feel like, damn, that song, like, what? Who sings that song?
It literally hits different.
Yeah, it hits it hits different. I was listening, even so much now, I listen to music even from, it's weird, I think it comes from your vibe. I've been in a lot of transformation, especially in the last almost 2 years. And I'm more myself, and I feel like I'm drawn now music side, not to country, it's not that, but like rock and alternative going back. That's what I like and I'm enjoying more of.
I love that.
Like I'm even like I would say like John Mayer. That. John Mayer's perfect example of this. Like his music, his new album dropped.
Yeah,
I got to. I think I sent you a text. I was like, I'm on the third song, and I'm like, what is happening right now?
Yeah, you know that's a themed record. It's he made it sonically to match a 1980s record. That's why it sounds.
Oh my god, it felt like
resonating with you.
Boom.
Because
oh, is it in that frequency? Enough,
no, but what they did
it's written that way.
They went back and they sonically reproduced the way that they produced music in the 80s, and they made kind of an 80s douchey pop record on purpose.
Interesting.
Oh, that was that's what the first it. Song. The first song
is
like
is what he called it.
The first song's Last Train, that opened me up to a different way.
It's great.
And then the second song, he got me because of personal things, and I was like, oh, you son of a bitch. And then the third song he wrote in a child's perspective.
Wow.
Well, and it's really good. It's
John
really
Mayer, good. I need to listen. I still need to listen to
John Mayer has a special place in my heart because of the song Gravity, because that's what I use for her. You know, that's the word I use for her all the time. And
I love John. That whole is it Conundrum? But forgive me. Is it Conundrum?
Continuum.
Continuum. I don't know why I'm going to say Conundrum. I guess it was
Conundrum. I love that.
I think it was the thing that I was recreating in my life.
Like maybe that needs to be my emo album that I put out, my punk album. Yeah, so I'm going to put out and I just call it Conundrum. I feel like I'm loving it.
but yeah, that whole thing, great. that was something. And I want to bring something else up before we end this episode too. You brought up the song Shameless earlier.
I love
it's
that
very
song.
Weird that you brought that up. That was the first song that I sang as an artist.
Like ever.
Oh, really?
Shameless, you know, it's a Billy Joel song, so it was the first song I sang as an artist. So anyway,
that's another one.
We need to probably wrap this episode because we could go on forever and ever and ever about music. You got two musicians, you have a future songwriter musician over here with Chris.
I'm telling you, man, I got one in me. I got one in me, and you know what's coming, and I cannot wait for Jess Lee and you guys to read what I wrote.
Well, when you come visit, we'll take you to the room.
We'll take you to the room
and we'll write
some
magic.
That's exactly right.
I got it in me. I know it. And there's going to be, there's something there just untapped. And I felt this way even when, remember I did that spiritual reading thing that was bought for me for my birthday, that one it did for, she read for Tony Robbins. She's been around some major people.
I want one of those so bad.
She was telling me about things about myself. I was like, I don't even, who are you? That's like, so what? Cool. How are you doing this?
Yeah, I watched it.
I did send it to you.
I was really impressed by it. I thought it was really cool. Well,
she said tons of writing in like my future.
Let's recap today's episode. Things we've learned from today. Jess Lee is into melody because that's what attracts people to music. Chris Ross, he's fluent in energy and we can't wait to take him into RCA Studios, which is shrouded in energy. Virginia is looking like a hobo with his hair today, but hey, what can I do when
I'm gut punch.
That was a great clip you clipped last week. It was it was funny. Yeah.
And then Jess Lee looking like a cinnamon dream in her peach shirt.
Oh my God.
In any case.
Georgia Peach.
On behalf of the Jess Lee Road Show, Winject Studios, and Black Label Nash, join us for another exciting, fun-filled episode of the Jess Lee Road Show next week with Jess Lee, Steve Virginia, and Chris Ross. We'll see y'all later. Peace.
This broadcast is brought to you by Winject Studios. We are an all-in-one educational platform for podcasters that revolutionizes how hosts leverage content to increase engagement with listeners, downloads, and income. We come together to focus on community, collaboration, and collective impact. For more information on how you can interact directly with our hosts, access exclusive live content with offers you can't get anywhere else from our official partners, join our purpose-driven community by visiting www.winject.com. If you're ready to build a career doing what you love, then we're ready to see you there.
Nobody can do it like me, like me, like me.